I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, 2 hours a day, 9 to 11 o'clock. Today's show got several different things to get into. Next hour, somebody alerted me to a clip, an interview that Alex Jones did on Steven Crowder's Louder with Crowder. I don't know if people have seen this. Somebody alerted me to it, and then I heard another breakdown of it. And I hate to hear somebody else examine something before I do. I don't want to co-opt anybody else's talking points. But this was Alex Jones on Steven Crowder, where they both say they used to be libertarians, used to call themselves libertarians. Alex Jones going on to say he's not only not a libertarian any longer, he's anti-libertarian, and he calls the Libertarian Party a cancer. Now, this is interesting development to me. I'm not any stranger to the criticisms of libertarians. They're strange to me. They really are fairly odd to me. They feel more political than intellectual, because a lot of conservatives, particularly in today's day and age, after 2 years of lockdowns and mandates and all kinds of bossing you around, a financial system on the brink, a country completely insolvent with debt, it seems odd for the freedom fighters out there to not be attracted to a party that's about teeny, 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 tiny government and real freedom. But conservatives have been launching attacks at libertarians for quite a while. Because honestly, from what I observe, and I am an observer of the system, most people are they're scared. They're scared of real freedom. And they really don't think it would work. It's interesting. We know the left believes that the government should be mommy and daddy, almost quite literally. They're ready to do away with the family altogether and have the state raise your child on the left. But on the right, a lot of the rhetoric out of the right is about things. They use the terms freedom and liberty, but they're actually quite scared of them in practice. So neither side really understands what it is. But I thought it was kind of interesting. So next hour, I'm going to play this clip, this Louder with Crowder, Steven Crowder and Alex Jones talking about libertarianism, because there were some things about the way they broke it down that just had me asking a couple of questions. So you can judge for yourself. We'll do that next hour. Quotes of the day today. The first one is just a meme. This is actually put out by Being Libertarian, and I didn't realize that till I pulled it up this morning. It says, domestic oil is the new ivermectin. You can't have it because it would solve the crisis they need you to go through. This was interesting. President Biden, oof, it's hard to say those words in a sentence. President Biden. I mean, I'm looking at it. It says it's there. It just feels like a bad dream. Biden said, he tweeted out, we understand something that MAGA Republicans in Congress don't. Wall Street didn't build this country. Working people did. This was the Biden administration's tweet, to which Thomas Massey replied, you fired thousands of working Americans over an unproven compulsory medical treatment, primarily to the benefit of a select few Wall Street corporations. Oh, I don't know. Are there really still people on the left that believe that the Democrats are fighting Wall Street? Don't be silly. This is interesting. This was a quote from Muhammad Ali. I seem to have verified this one and ran across some websites that were dedicated. You know, there's quote websites out there. I'll be honest. I use them from time to time. There are hundreds of very interesting quotes attributed to Muhammad Ali. He may start making the rounds in my quotes of the day, but I ran across this one, and I think I've verified that it is Muhammad Ali. I'm starting to get very, I have to research quotes of the day now to ensure some level of accuracy. Somebody fact-checked one of my quotes a few weeks ago, and I think they were right, that maybe the attribution of a particular quote was not accurate or was not ever documented anywhere. That I think it was a John Adams quote or a Samuel Adams quote. There's no documentation that they'd actually ever said it. Propaganda is everywhere. But this is a Muhammad Ali quote. "People run in packs because they don't feel safe alone. I run alone because I don't feel safe in packs." That's Muhammad Ali, and I understand what he means by that. And this was another interesting one to round them out for today. The one who plants trees, knowing that he will never sit in their shade, has at least started to understand the meaning of life. The one who plants trees, knowing that he will never sit in their shade, has at least started to understand the meaning of life. We suffer from a tremendous lack of long-term thinking and unselfish action. Around the world, but here, particularly in the United States, we do things only if it immediately gratifies us and do very, very little in terms of long-term thinking. If it doesn't benefit us today, we're not concerned with doing it. That's a shame when it comes to our kids. Libertarian Party has tweeted out, and I thought this was an interesting one, for people who are in the culture wars these days. Libertarian Party is not mincing words with the new management. Libertarian Party under new management, the Mises Caucus. Libertarian Party tweeted out, "Every teacher, bureaucrat, and school administrator intentionally experimenting on our country's children with queer theory or critical race theory should be fired and prosecuted immediately. Every law that protects them should be repealed immediately." They don't mince words. And the last one here from the Libertarian Party, "The most important distinction in any society is not between rich or poor, right or left. It's that which exists between the people and the blood-sucking parasites. And the worst parasites are in your government." That's right. There is an us against them, but it isn't against your neighbor. It's not against your cousin. It is against the parasites that infest our government. I ran across a clip. I didn't take the time to edit it. I would have had to take a bunch of FCC no-no words out of it, so I didn't bother to do it. But I don't know if anybody has seen the recent Bill Maher clip where he is talking about presentism, and that is judging every historical figure by the accepted thoughts, the accepted behavior of today. Bill Maher, as I said, I can't do this. I could probably spend a little bit of time in it, take some of the words out of there. But Bill Maher might be the most important culture warrior in the country today. Now, I disagree with Bill Maher on several things. He's got a left-wing bent. But he is now willing to do monologues calling out the wokeness and does a great job of pointing out the silliness to that audience. And he can do it because he comes from a much more rational left. Now, again, there's a lot of things with Bill Maher that I would disagree with him on, but it's very interesting to watch him. You can go to YouTube and get his monologues. If you don't have HBO, I haven't watched an entire one of his shows. His panelists are usually skewed pretty left-wing. But you can go to YouTube and find his monologues. I wish I had clipped the name of this most recent one, but it was really very, very interesting where he talked about the idea. He broke down slavery. This is Bill Maher, and he talks to a left-wing audience. This is incredibly effective. He talks to a left-wing audience, and he talked about slavery. He said, "Where do you think the slaves came from? You think a bunch of white people, and I've made this point myself, you think a bunch of white people just traipsed into the heart of Africa and just started taking people? No. No, black people in Africa enslaved other black people, and they enslaved them for themselves and sold them to slave traders." He goes through the fact that the Egyptians, the Greeks, he said, we've tried to cast slavery as some kind of uniquely American experiment. I actually had a conversation with somebody about racism the other day, this idea of systemic racism and that our country was built on racism. This is a left-wing person that I'm not angry at. I just had a conversation with them, and I made a point that they actually had to acknowledge. It made them go, huh, that's kind of true. The United States was a very young country when we abolished slavery. It only lasted for about 80 years in the United States. Around the world, slavery was the norm. In many places, it still exists. The United States was only 80 years old when we looked around and said, you know, this isn't right. We're going to get rid of slavery. So for people to actually put slavery as the fault of the United States is kind of short-sighted. We were one of the first to abolish it. And we did it pretty quickly in historical terms. Having been around for thousands and thousands of years, we had about 80 years of slavery and said, no, we're not doing that anymore. Now, Bill Maher points this out, and it's very interesting if you want to check it out. But he's become a very important culture warrior these days. And what's interesting to me is that I think the most effective culture warriors, there's certainly a lot of them on the right, because the culture war, the gender stuff, the critical race stuff is so silly, it should be rejected by the right. But the most effective culture warriors are going to come from the left because they speak to these people. And these are the Bill Maher's, Jimmy Dore, who's a progressive comedian that I talk about a lot here, Glenn Greenwald and Matt Taibbi, both kind of left-wing journalists, but they can see through the insanity, and of course, Joe Rogan. The right screaming at the woke gets absolutely nowhere, but it just gets the woke more entrenched in their tribe. But when it comes to some of these left-wing guys, Jimmy Dore, Bill Maher, Glenn Greenwald, Joe Rogan, some of these guys going after the wokeness, these are the most effective culture warriors out there. I encourage you to watch some of Bill Maher's stuff, and then be ready for him to say some things that you disagree with, and maybe don't hate him immediately. But very interesting stuff. Maybe I will take the time to edit and present that clip to you. When I come back, boy, I saw this coming from a mile away. I don't know how smart I am. That's always it's very subjective, I guess. I've had a pretty good IQ score when I've taken tests in the past, but I think since I took those tests, I've done some pretty horrific things to my brain over the years. But I've got a pretty good gut instinct for the way things are going to go. We're going to talk about something I've been talking about for a few years now here on this show, and that's when it comes to Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies, thanks to a listener who pointed this out to me. I had seen some headlines on it that made me just go, yeah, that's exactly what I was expecting. We'll talk about that when we come back. Stick around.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through.
All right, before we get into this news, we just ran an ad for Hometown Hardware out here in Flora. I've got ads for Revel Ace Hardware. I had occasion this weekend to need to get some hardware, get some screws and some other stuff. And it was quite interesting. I was driving past one of the big box stores, the orange one, and I went in looking for something particular. And what I ended up doing, because I couldn't find a soul around to help me. I mean, I don't know if you've been to any of these big box stores in our new economy. This happened a couple of years ago. There used to be somebody in the big box stores in just about every department. They've got their vest on, and you might have to walk an aisle over, but you see an associate walking around that had expertise in that department. That's over. Those people are long gone. They've been gone for years. And so it was interesting. So I ended up buying a bunch of stuff because I didn't want to get home and realize I'd gotten the wrong thing. So I bought a bunch of stuff knowing I got to go back now and return everything. Still ended up buying the wrong stuff. And then realized that I was close enough. I just looked up to try to find a hardware store. So I found Revel Ace Hardware over there in the DeVille Center. You walk into Revel Ace Hardware, and there were about six people there. Greeted me at the door. The woman at front said hello. She was very friendly. Asked if I could use any help. I told her what I was looking for. She got on a little headset thing, and she said, "Hey, Bob." We're about to send this guy back to you. And he walked me straight to what I needed, talked to me. It took me all of about 4 minutes to get exactly what I needed with a store associate. So we need to support these locally owned, these local hardware stores. They are truly amazing. Now, they do not carry everything that the big box places have. I'm very aware of that. But when I just need to remind myself not to even make the mistake, even if I'm driving by one of the big orange box stores or the blue box stores, unless it is something that I can only get there, these local businesses, it's amazing the difference in customer service between the big box stores and local shops. So just food for thought. It struck me how much better the service was. And they did not provide me a great deal of service because I spent a lot of money. I can assure you it was my purchase was incredibly small, yet I still got great service. So just an aside. I don't know. I get things wrong. At the time of the opening parts of Russia building up troops on the border with Ukraine, I pretty publicly said, Putin's not going in there. I was dead wrong about that. I was really, really wrong about that. I understand the situation much better now than I did then, but I was certainly wrong. But I think I've got a pretty good instinct for smelling a rat, for kind of anticipating what these parasites in government are capable of and what they're not capable of. I was very, very much on the record from the very beginning, even after having voted for Donald Trump, saying, look, you know, the wall, I understand the call for it, I know why everybody's so enthusiastic about it, but I said from day one, it's just never going to happen. It's just, they're not ever going to build this wall. It's not because I don't want them to. It's not because we're not capable of it. It's just never going to happen. And, you know, I was dismissed, but it's true. I can kind of tell, you know, what's pandering, what's not thought out well, what's, you know, what they're capable of and what they're capable of not doing. And I think I've got a good sense of it. When it comes to cryptocurrencies, of which I'm a fan, because cryptocurrencies are not attached to any government, and as a libertarian, I love any kind of decentralization. But I've known that when it comes to the Bitcoin stuff, I've had people on here and talked to many people about crypto over the years. A few years ago when it was shooting to the moon, its first run to 20,000, it became quite the mania. I think this was at the end of 2017. And I said, you know, I just feel like the government's going to come after this thing. The government cannot allow competing currencies. They just can't. We can't allow competing currencies from other countries, much less Americans having a choice between the U.S. dollar or whatever central bank digital currency they're about to roll out on us, and that could be within a matter of months. They cannot allow the competition. So I always was, my big fear was that the government would come in and outlaw it. And here's the headlines, and I appreciate Greg, who emailed me one story on this. I hadn't seen the story he sent, but I had seen on Friday. Here's three headlines that were stacked on top of each other on MarketWatch. The first one was, crypto poses threat to, quote, financial stability, unquote, of everyday Americans, Biden administration warns in new report. And this is mobilizing the Treasury. President Joe Biden's administration expressed concern over recent developments in cryptocurrency markets and their impact on average Americans' financial health, as it introduced a series of reports Friday outlining policy recommendations for regulating the digital assets. Recent turmoil in crypto markets, quote, highlight how, without proper oversight, cryptocurrencies risk harming everyday Americans' financial stability and our national security. There you go. Now, this has worked. As soon as they say national security, people on the right click their heels together and do what they're told. This was said by Brian Deese. He didn't say that. I said that conservatives click their heels together and do what they're told every time national security is mentioned. But Brian Deese is the one that said that crypto markets right now highlight how, without proper oversight, cryptocurrencies risk harming everyday Americans' financial stability and our national security. That was said by Brian Deese. He is the horrific director of the National Economic Council. The Biden administration, quote, believes that now, more than ever, prudent regulation of cryptocurrencies is needed if digital assets are going to play the role we believe they can in fostering innovation and supporting our economic and technological competitiveness. They're coming after these coins. And what's interesting is they're going to use this. There's been a big cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin in particular, started the year off at about $50,000 a coin, $48,000 a coin, after hitting a high of close to $70,000 a coin. Right now it's trading at $19,156. A lot of Americans have been hurt by cryptocurrencies. It's interesting, though, the Wall Street firms, you want to talk about hurting financial health of Americans, the financial stability of Americans? What about the housing market in 2007? And what I believe will turn out to be, historically, the housing market of 2022, where people bought high and will be forced to sell low. But, you know, when the markets take out Americans, they don't go after Wall Street. They allow you to speculate in stocks. They allow you to lose your money in stocks. They don't target Wall Street. Nor should they. I'm not advocating for that. I do believe there will be a time, and it may be after this next crisis. Here's another prediction. As I say, I think I've got some pretty good gut instincts on some of this stuff. When the next market crash happens, if it's severe, and there's a potential that it could be severe, I could be wrong about that, the Fed may have 20 more tricks up its sleeve. I don't see them. I can't anticipate them. I think they've overplayed their hand already, and they're out of ammunition to stop a financial crisis again. But I could be wrong. But when the market takes a big dive, again, people lose 80, 90% of some of their portfolios, I believe the government is going to come in and say, look, the little people out there, the stock market's too tough for you. We're going to take all your retirement assets that you've got invested in mutual funds and stocks and things like that. We're going to give you a guaranteed government annuity. We're going to take all that money out of your retirement accounts. We're going to take it in. We're going to replace it with government guarantees. Because we love you, and you just can't accept this kind of risk. I've said that many times before. I believe at some point there will be a crisis where they lock the little people out of the markets, and they claim that it's for your safety. But it sounds like they're doing the same thing here with cryptocurrencies. Other headline was U.S. Justice Department forms National Network of Prosecutors focused on crypto crime. This means, and I've been paywalled out of MarketWatch, and I refuse to pay them the $1 for the next 4 weeks. It's not the dollar. I might pay them the dollar. It's just that I'll forget in 4 weeks, and then they'll tag me for whatever it is, $8.99 every week going forward. So I'm not going to do it. But this is the Justice Department is going to build out an apparatus focused in on really being able to track and trace cryptocurrencies. And what they're going to tell you is, it's because we're out there fighting money laundering. We're fighting crime. We're fighting drug dealing. All the bad guys are using crypto. Trust us, if you're using crypto for good purposes, this won't be used for you. Does that sound familiar? Sound a little bit like the war on terror? Oh, we're just focusing on those brown people, those brown Muslims half a world away. To which conservatives said, duh, okay. And now the war on terrorism is coming home domestically. But the U.S. Justice Department right now forming a national network of prosecutors focused on crypto crime. And then Nassim Tlaib said Bitcoin's a market, quote, tumor, thanks to Fed's easy money. He is the Black Swan author as well. There will be more turmoil in the cryptocurrency markets. Invest at your own risk. But I'm telling you, I think the ultimate game of this is when the U.S. is forced to roll out its digital currency itself, its digital dollar, it just cannot compete with anybody else. It won't allow the competition. It will outlaw these other things, citing things like crime and money laundering and drug dealing. They will tell you it's because they love you. And they'll tell you that they're doing it to fight crime. And the law and order crowd will say, of course, you must do that. And you will actually, once again, put another brick in the wall of the prison that you're building for yourself. One other story here. I guess maybe I could save this for Tech Tuesday because I got a couple of things to go through. I'll tell you what, I might save this, these tech stories for tomorrow. And we're going to get into Biden made a pronouncement yesterday. We should all give him a round of applause. Joe Biden declared the pandemic is over. Well, happy days. I think I declared the pandemic over in about June of 2020, maybe May. I think around May of 2020, when I knew what we were dealing with, as a healthy, middle-aged man, I realized, oh no, I'm not participating in this pandemic. But anyway, people are cheering. Joe Biden has declared it over. We'll take a look at that in just a second.
I need
Stay with
to
me.
Feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me today. Big news today. The mental patient has declared that the pandemic is finally over. I'm going to spend just a brief amount of time on this, and then we're going to turn to view the shot program. Some interesting things taking place in that.
Very long road, but some promising news last night about the COVID pandemic.
President Biden saying that while there's still work to do, he believes the pandemic is over. CBS News' John Diaz is live in Hamilton Heights with more on the president's comments and the battle that is still underway. John.
Chris and Mary, good morning to both of you. And the president's remarks, as you can imagine, they have been music to many people's ears. However,
I mean, are there people sitting around still? I've talked about this a lot during, you know, when the CDC was changing their guidance. Were there parents out there with children that were getting up in the morning, much like you check the weather reports? They were checking the CDC advisories. Does Scotty have to wear two masks today, or can he wear one mask today? Are people sitting around? Are people rejoicing that Joe Biden? It's music to people's ears that Joe Biden, an obviously demented human being, has declared that the pandemic is over. As I said, I think the pandemic was over for me in May of 2020. I just had to live in the world with a bunch of people who were still observing it.
However, though President Joe Biden does not officially have the authority, the power to declare an end of a pandemic, the power remains with the World Health Organization. And in just a few hours from...
The power to end a pandemic resides with the vaccine sales organizations.
Now, health leaders from the local level up to the federal level, they will be meeting here later on this morning to discuss and advertise why it's still important for everyone to get their boosters so we can keep an upper hand on this.
Yeah, okay, so keep that in mind, your boosters. I've got a heartbreaking story in just a second.
It's virus.
The pandemic is over.
A bold and optimistic statement made by President Joe Biden last night on 60 Minutes to Scott Pelley.
We still have a problem with COVID. We're still doing a lot of work on it. But the pandemic is over.
According to John Hopkins University across America, there have been...
Okay, who cares about the Johns Hopkins numbers? There you go. Joe Biden says the pandemic is over. Can the people take the masks off now? I'll be interested. I'm going to have to make sure that I head to a Kroger today just to observe. Maybe I can tap some people on the shoulder. Hey, Joe Biden said, pandemic's over. Pandemic's over. Listen to this. This is on YouTube. It's New York Presbyterian Hospital. Underneath it, there's a little disclaimer. You know how YouTube says, if somebody does something on COVID, they say, for reliable COVID, you need to go, you know, COVID information, you need to go to the CDC. They got little flyers underneath everything where YouTube tells you if it's true or false or if you should question it. You know, all of this soft censorship that YouTube's been doing. Underneath this one, it says, from an accredited hospital. Now, underneath it, it says, learn how experts define health sources in its journal in the National Academy of Medicine. So that they're basically kind of YouTube's endorsing this one. Now, this is a commercial. This is a commercial for New York Presbyterian Hospital. Listen to this.
I've been into fashion since I can remember. But one day, I had a stomach ache so bad, I didn't want to do anything. The team at New York Presbyterian said it was actually my heart. It was severely swollen.
Huh.
Something called myocarditis. But doctors gave me medicines and used machines to control my heartbeat. They saved me. So now I can become the next great fashion designer.
Stay amazing, it says. New York Presbyterian Hospital. They're running a commercial about a little girl getting myocarditis. Now, if you're running a commercial about that particular thing, obviously, people must be kind of wondering why children have myocarditis. This is more normalization of the fact that little kids have myocarditis. Now, I was a kid once. I think most of us were. And I never remembered any warnings, any talk about myocarditis in my elementary school, my junior high or senior high. Didn't really talk about that, did we? But suddenly now, New York Presbyterian's running a commercial. The medical system in this country is much like the government. They cause a problem, then they want you to pat them on the back and praise them for supposedly addressing that problem. Now, with these shots, they can give kids myocarditis, and then they want praise for treating the myocarditis. This is very, very governmental of them. Listen to this. Any of you out there who think to yourself, well, I got the first two shots, and nothing happened to me, Mike. You guys on WYAB constantly talking about these shots. I know a bunch of people who got these shots, and nothing happened. Well, you're right, and I've made the point quite often that the numbers of people, at least recognize the numbers of people that have suffered really catastrophic effects from the shot, probably maybe around 2 million. That may be 1% of all of the people in the United States who have gotten these shots. But if you think you got the first couple and you were okay, and maybe you got a booster and you're still okay and you think we're crazy, so you're going to line up to take the new and improved bivalent 5 shot. You might want to listen to this. This is a Facebook post from Stephanie Foster. She says, my beautiful mother's life was taken away yesterday by the COVID booster shot! She was happy and perfectly healthy. Spent yesterday morning visiting me at my house up until her appointment time. She left for her appointment happy and energetic. She had no medical issues at all. My mom texted me right after she got the shot to let me know she was waiting the 15 minutes, and I texted her back. It was right after then that they say, quote, she dropped dead before she hit the floor, unquote. In Shoppers Drug Mart. That is what the docs have told us. This never should have happened had they known that they were shooting what they were shooting into us. My mom would still be here. So this mom spends a day visiting her daughter. Everything's fine. She's happy. She's energetic. She goes to get her shots. She even texts, hey, I've already had the shot. I'm just waiting my 15 minutes. You know, they like to observe us because they love us. We're going to give you 15 minutes to see if you drop dead. Well, in this particular case, this woman did drop dead. Dropped dead. So if you're considering another round of the booster because the first two didn't hurt you and the first booster didn't hurt you, so certainly these things are perfectly safe. Now, this woman got a booster. Only way you get a booster is if you've already had a couple, and I'm sure she felt empowered to get those because she had done fine through the first couple. This is just absolutely disgusting. But trigger alert. Trigger alert for when I come back. We're going to get a little bit of news on Bill Gates. Bill Gates in a meeting with one of America's favorite politicians. We'll do that when we come back. Stick around. So there's a lot of talk about Donald Trump fighting the globalists, right? It's all against the globalists. He's taking on the globalists. Well, in words, he does talk disparagingly about the globalists. MSNBC, the Chris Hayes show, the soy boy Chris Hayes that's on MSNBC, he's got this, he calls this exclusive. Now he's put out a video on it, so I can use it. Bill Gates gave a talk recently, I guess. Actually, this was a couple of years ago. He gave a talk. I guess it was private at the time, but I don't think I've ever played this clip. This was about Bill Gates talks about his meeting with Donald Trump. Only met him a couple of times. Never met him before. He was a candidate before he was president. But he met him a couple of times, and he really kind of yucks it up. He makes fun of Trump. In front of this crowd, obviously a left-wing crowd. And this is why MSNBC played this clip, was because Chris Hayes set it up. You want to know how people talk about Donald Trump when he's not around. This was the thing, because obviously MSNBC is just this hysterical anti-Trump network. So, but this is the part of Bill Gates' recounting of his meeting with Donald Trump that was, I thought, was kind of interesting.
Anyway, so I saw him in Trump Tower. You know, I said, hey, science and innovation is a great thing. You should be a leader who drives innovation. And that conversation was about a broad set of things in energy, in health, in education. You know, pick things you want to do that are big. HIV vaccine, you could, you know, accelerate that. Be associated with innovation. And then the second time I saw him was the march after that, so March 2017 in the White House. In both of those two meetings, he asked me if vaccines weren't a bad thing, because he was considering a commission to look into ill effects of vaccines. And somebody, his name is Robert Kennedy Jr., was advising him that vaccines were causing bad things. And I said, no, that's a dead end. That would be a bad thing. Don't do that. Both times he wanted to know if there was a difference between HIV and HPV. So I was able to explain that those are rarely confused with.
So anyway, you get the point. Bill Gates making fun of him. But what's interesting in there is that I've commented on this many times. I know when Trump, when he got my vote, and we were watching his transition team take form, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. came down from the golden elevators and did a little met with the press for a second. He said, "Yeah, I'm talking to Donald Trump about vaccine safety." Robert F. Kennedy Jr. being the forefront of vaccine safety. And then as I watched the Trump administration take hold and through the years, I realized I didn't hear anything about that anymore. The Vaccine Safety Commission with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. suddenly just disappeared. Nothing happened. Well, now we understand why. Because Bill Gates told Donald Trump, hey, it's a dead end. You don't need to look into vaccine safety. And I guess Donald Trump said, oh, okay. And he dumped Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And it's interesting the way that that ended up getting set up for everything, because we know what ended up in the vaccine world with the Trump administration, which was Operation Warp Speed. This was, I want to read this. This was from Tim Brown, Sons of Liberty Media. He said, because a lot of people in this fighting the globalist idea, people really cheered when Donald Trump stopped funding the World Health Organization. I applaud him for that. What a great idea. Get us out of this horrible institution, the World Health Organization. The problem is that we didn't save any money by dumping the WHO. As a matter of fact, we just redirected it. Tim Brown with the Sons of Liberty Media wrote this. When President Donald Trump made the announcement that he was pulling out of the World Health Organization, his followers cheered the move, and rightly so. I even cheered that move, but I knew something was amiss, and lo and behold, it's because he put our money into the Bill Gates-founded Gavi Vaccine Alliance. Derek Brose wrote, while Trump supporters view the U.S. withdrawal from WHO financing as a win for nationalism or a black eye to the globalists, the truth is a bit more nuanced. In early June, and this is several years ago, the Trump administration declared support for Gavi to the tune of a $1.16 billion U.S. donation. Trump's support for Gavi came via the first ever virtual global vaccine summit. At this summit, Gavi surpassed the goal of $7.4 billion, instead raising $8.8 billion U.S. dollars and securing commitments from most major nations around the world. Gavi even received a $5 million donation from the Rockefeller Foundation. Gavi stated that the funding will go to, quote, routine immunization programs and will also help the public-private partnership, quote, play a major role in the rollout of a future COVID-19 vaccine. And we know that within months that took place. This at the time, Donald Trump actually, with the Build Back Better Boris Johnson over in England. I've played this clip before. This is when Donald Trump stopped funding the WHO and instead redirected even more money to Bill Gates' Gavi Vaccine Alliance. And this was what he said in a prepared statement sent out by Twitter. This is actually from USAID. USAID is supposedly the kind of the U.S. aid organization, very well known to be a CIA front. They tweeted this out, quote, as the coronavirus has shown, there are no borders, unquote. USAID's echoes real Donald Trump's words and is proud in partnering with Gavi by committing $1.6 billion to protect people through vaccines because hashtag vaccines work. This is what Donald Trump said when he made this very generous taxpayer donation to Bill Gates' Gavi Association.
Gavi operates with great transparency, and Boris Johnson is somebody with tremendous respect for you and everything you do. He called, he said, do you think you could do something maybe around the Oval Office or right by the Oval Office? I said, why not? It happens to be right behind me. As the coronavirus has shown, there are no borders. It doesn't discriminate. It's mean, it's nasty, but we're going to all take care of it together. It's great to be partnering with you. We will work hard. We will work strong. Send my regards to Boris, and good luck. Let's get the answer.
Yeah, there you go. Donald Trump hawking Gavi, Bill Gates' vaccine group, and we know how well that has turned out. I'm just saying, for somebody who's fighting the globalist, the fight might be easier if he did not actually fund them at the same time. Bill Gates won out over RFK Jr.
I see the shadows on my face. People have told me I don't look the same. Maybe I lost weight. I'm playing hooky.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me today. I make no bones about the fact that I am a libertarian guy. And I've spent the better part of the last 20 years as being a small L libertarian, meaning I didn't belong to the Libertarian Party. It's been quite a train wreck. They actually had they tried to give us Bill Weld, who was a warmongering neocon Republican, as a vice presidential candidate back in 2016. It made it easier for me to vote for Donald Trump at the time. In the past few years, the Libertarian Party has been filled with woke people. Really been very, very disgusting. I've been out here very openly criticizing the Libertarian Party, and this is why, you know, this is why I say I am not beholden to any tribe. As soon as somebody says something I disagree with, I don't care who it is. I'll just call it out because I don't play those kinds of games. I don't owe my allegiance to anybody. I am like a lot of Americans out there, probably a lot of people I talk to. I want to be left alone. I want to be left alone to succeed or fail on my own. And the libertarian thinking is really the only way that that's going to happen. And this country was founded on libertarian ideals as much as the Republican Party and current day conservative think tankers want to convince you that, well, the libertarians have got some decent ideas, but so much of it's unworkable. We've got to continue this war on drugs. I mean, we've been doing what we've been doing, and we're getting what we've been getting. It seems to me that maybe it's time for some different way of thinking. Last 70 years, the trend has not been our friend. So I am probably, I don't know if there's anybody in North or South Mississippi, but in Central Mississippi, I know I'm the only libertarian, thank goodness for WYAB here that allows me to say what I say, because it's not popular. You know, in a lot of cases, it's my views are very different than what people think. But I've been given a platform here as a libertarian voice, and I'm unabashed about it. So I was interested when I ran across this clip from Louder with Crowder, Stephen Crowder's show with Alex Jones, where Alex Jones, who has identified as a libertarian for years, now is not only not still a libertarian, he's an anti-libertarian and calls the Libertarian Party a cancer. Stephen Crowder at the same time comes out and says he used to consider himself a libertarian, but not any longer. And I'm going to play a little bit of their conversation today to try to point out what I think was kind of odd about it. Now, I feel a little gross doing this because I heard Dave Smith. He's got he's a libertarian comedian, very involved in the recent takeover of the Libertarian Party by a group called the Mises Caucus. Essentially, it means the Libertarian Party has been taken over by the Ron Paul faction of the Libertarian Party. And so I heard Dave Smith break down this clip. Someone else had sent it to me. But then I heard Dave Smith break this down. I don't like to listen to other people comment on something before I do, because I don't want to rip anybody else off. I don't want to be accused of copying anybody else. I've got my own ideas. I've got some pretty I think, decent analytical skills on stuff, and I'm not scared to just go out on a limb and interpret things the way I want to interpret them. But I did think this was interesting enough. Now, there's probably a lot of people who have not even heard this, so basically I'm broadcasting the fact that Alex Jones and Steven Crowder, both very popular in conservative circles, have come out against what I believe. And maybe that's in bad form. Maybe I'm actually going to give more people cover to go, see, Mike was wrong about everything because Alex Jones and Steven Crowder said so. But I just thought it was interesting enough, and I got 2 hours a day to fill. Might as well tackle this one. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to take a quick break and then we're going to get into this. I'm going to a short segment now and then a long segment in a second. This will be Steven Crowder and Alex Jones talking about why they have decided that libertarianism has no place in this country, that the two-party system is exactly where we need to be. That's a strange conclusion to make when we see where we're sitting right now. But that's the conclusion that they come to. We'll listen to it when we come back. Stick around.
Through the streets of Soho in the rain.
All right, we're going to take a look at this. This is Alex Jones and Steven Crowder. And look, I can't hold a candle to these guys. I don't know if I'm going to play this clip in here. Steven Crowder was recounting in this interview something that they had done. Alex Jones was talking about how he's been canceled. I totally disagree with that. I thought it was horrific what they did to Alex Jones, and it certainly was. It was one of those things where, you know, a lot of people were saying, if they can do this to Alex Jones, they can do it to anybody. And it wasn't very long after they did it to Alex Jones that they started doing it to everybody. And Alex Jones was just attacked and sidelined, and everything he tried was, he was cut off from paywalls, cut off of YouTube, cut off of everything. The war of on supposed, air quotes here in the studio, disinformation started with the attack on Alex Jones in earnest. So I support him on that, and he and Steven Crowder were talking about the fact that they've been censored by the big tech companies, and Steven Crowder brought up a story. This is the genius of Steven Crowder, and I would probably agree with him on a whole lot of things. He's a bit neoconist, Republicanish for me, so I disagree with him on some stuff too. But when the Chaz stuff, the autonomous zone, was going on up in Portland, Crowder actually rented out the Airbnb that the head of Chaz, the autonomous zone, if you remember this a few years ago, where they declared that they were in charge, they just took over a few city blocks and said, this is our country now, essentially. It was very weirdness. The residents were a little miffed, and it turned into an absolute train wreck. But Steven Crowder went up there and he rented an Airbnb that was actually rented out. Very interesting, isn't it, that one of these socialists at Chaz in Portland kind of gets capitalist when it comes to the fact that he can get some value by renting out an Airbnb. Very interesting. These socialists really like to make money. It's very strange, but they do. Anyway, the head of Chaz actually had an apartment or a house that he rented out on Airbnb. So Steven Crowder rented it. And when they rented it, they went in and painted on the walls and everything and said, this is our house now. We've taken this over. It's our autonomous zone now. That's an absolutely genius move. And he actually says that the leader of Chaz had a pretty good sense of humor about it, strangely enough. But that Airbnb was upset that he had done these things, so he's no longer allowed to use Airbnb services. But I say that just to say I can see the genius behind both Alex Jones and Steven Crowder. They're fantastic media personalities, no doubt about it. And there's things with both of them I would really agree with and some things I might disagree with. So this is not really a bashing of them. It's just an examination of their idea that now, having said he was a libertarian for decades, Alex Jones now comes out and says it's not enough. It's kind of like racism. It's not enough to not be racist. You have to be anti-racist. It's not enough for Alex Jones to say that he is no longer a libertarian. He has now come out as anti-libertarian. And he calls the Libertarian Party a cancer. So I wanted to play some of this clip and just make a couple of comments on it.
So the idea, no, this is private corporations globally setting up a code for guns and gun accessories. And then they go on to admit, when you read deeper, we're going to do this for everything now, for oil, for gas, for small gas-powered engines, for cars. California's saying by 2035, ban the combustion engine, or maybe earlier. It was 2035, right? And so, but by the way, you can't charge your car right now because there's not enough electricity. So that's where this is all going, is artificial scarcity is feudalism, where they can dictate total control over us. And that's what the Great Reset is an artificial collapse of civilization to force us onto a Cloward and Piven model. And so that's why I'm so incredibly concerned that the social credit score isn't coming. The social credit score is here. And with it, if you think the left censoring you on YouTube or Twitter or Facebook's bad, if you think the left debanking you or Airbnb kicking you out is bad, once they have these codes listed everywhere, they're going to add those codes up in a score. How much red meat do you eat? How much alcohol do you drink? How do you vote? And they admit that will then decide where you can go and what you can do. So it's not coming. It's here.
Yeah. Okay. And I got to tell you, knocks that out of the park. Absolutely, totally agree with him. That is true. This is exactly what we're seeing. And he's referring to this fact that that Visa has announced that they are going to start coding purchases from gun stores with a new code. So he certainly is. I disagree with nothing that he just said. It's absolutely true.
And I had to deal with that, with PayPal, with Shopify, with our platform a long time
ago.
Well,
he's about to tell us
Airbnb, but that one was kind of on me. That was my fault. We went down to Chaz and we rented out. Remember Raz Simone, the guy, the warlord in Chaz, who was handing out the rifles. We rented out his. He had an apartment that he Airbnb'd. We did a whole stream where we rented his apartment and declared it New Chaz. I remember he painted New Chaz on the wall, and he actually had a good sense of humor about it. But Airbnb absolutely did not. This is also why I talked about this earlier this week.
All right, so here we go. So I'm sorry I recounted the story. I thought it was in a previous part of the clip, but here we go.
You were sort of self-identified as a libertarian for a long time, and I always said, I'm kind of small-L libertarian. I don't do that anymore. And the reason is because you still have libertarians saying, well, the First Amendment only protects you from the government, not from corporations. But when you look at the – and I'm not talking about a conspiracy. Just when you look at the 3-point-whatever billion that Amex has gotten, let alone when you look at these banks, let alone when you look at the Section 230 protections for big tech, this is no long – there's no longer a dividing line between corporations, a free market, which I support. These are effectively thug arms of the government, and libertarianism cannot stand up in the face of that.
All right. So, there you go. So that's the first opening salvo. And I will say, I've criticized John Stossel. John Stossel from ABC News. He's a libertarian. And I've played some clips from him. He says some things that I really do agree with. He points out the problems with big government. There's a lot of stuff on that. But he's kind of what these guys are talking about right now, which is John Stossel is one of these that big corporations, because they're private entities, can do no wrong. And there are people, they're called regime libertarians. there's a spectrum of libertarians out there, the same way there's a spectrum of Republicans. Because there are rhinos, does that mean that that everybody should be completely anti-Republican and conservative? There are people out there that call themselves conservatives. I've said it on the show many times. I don't even know what conservative means anymore, because there's such a broad range of what's acceptable within this air quotes conservative movement. So there is an element of people within the Libertarian Party in the past, particularly, not so much now as it's under new management, but this idea that that corporations, because they're private entities, they can do whatever they want to. What's interesting to me, and maybe I'm doing this a little early. He says libertarianism cannot address this idea because private entities like Twitter, Amex, all this stuff. And then he lists off all of the money these corporations have gotten from anyone? The government. See, the libertarian argument is the government's too damn big. In a libertarian government, you don't give $3 billion to American Express. Because you don't have that money to give, nor is it any of your business to be funding. Amazon with its cloud computing, it's in the billions and billions, hundreds of billions of dollars given to Amazon in these giant cloud computing contracts. See, libertarians wouldn't do this. So this idea that libertarians can't address because we see these corporations as free market, it's much like capitalism. I've explained it here on this show many times. We don't understand what capitalism is, so we don't have it anymore. We have it at the local level, the mom-and-pop shops. They're capitalist. If they don't do well, they go under. They got to make a ton of decisions, they got to do a lot of stuff right, and they got to put in a lot of hard work, and they can succeed, but they might also fail. At the upper levels, the corporate structure, the Wall Street firms, there's no capitalism there anymore. They don't take losses anymore. Losses are covered by the taxpayers. Profits they get to keep. Losses are democratized among the taxpayers. That's cronyism. It's corporatism. And libertarians point this out constantly. So this idea, but the funny thing about all that you listen to here is understanding that we are where we are now. And to criticize a party that has had no power, to criticize an ideology that has had no effect on where we are right now because it hasn't even been tried. We are where we are right now because of Republicans and Democrats. They've been calling the shots now for, I don't know how long, 150 years, something like that. But most certainly, it has been Republicans and Democrats that have run the show and gotten us exactly where we are. So the idea of saying, well, we can't listen to this group over here, they're totally off. No, you're the ones creating the system. You think Republicans have not fed money to these giant corporations? Certainly Democrats have too, as much as they like to tell their supporters. They're for the little guy and they're taking on Wall Street. No, they're fattening Wall Street. So I just thought that was kind of interesting. All of these things he's talking about are what libertarians talk about, which is the government is too powerful. If you had the small, tiny, infinitesimal fraction of the government we have right now that libertarians want, there is no money to give to these giant corporations. There is no Federal Reserve to put out zero interest rates so that places like Twitter can go for 15 years without making a profit just based on its stock, with the promise that someday, soon, they'll monetize. If people actually had to pay interest on the money they borrowed, they might consider whether or not an investment in Twitter is sound. If they have to pay interest for 15 years on the money they borrow to invest in Twitter, they might think twice about that. But when it's free money coming from the central bank, which the libertarians oppose, then these giant corporations that he's mentioning couldn't get so giant. It's the Fed and the government, two things that libertarians rail against, that have created this system that now they blame the libertarians for not having a solution to. It's very odd.
There's no longer a dividing line between corporations, a free market, which I support. These are effectively thug arms of the government.
And right, and your two parties created these thug arms.
Libertarianism cannot stand up in the face of that.
I 100% agree with you. In fact, I'm no longer even a little L libertarian. I'm anti-libertarian.
Oh, there he goes. He's made it up. I'm anti-libertarian. The people that have had no power whatsoever are somehow responsible for this, and we got to go with one of the two parties that created this mess.
And I'll explain why. 30 years ago, when I was first starting to get on air, 25 years ago, Republicans were pretty bad news, wanted to censor everybody, had a lot of problems.
Right.
The left hadn't turned into this pro-pedophile, Satan worship, cancer it is completely yet. So I didn't like them.
You just hit the trifecta. Go on.
So I thought, well, libertarians want to leave people alone socially, but they want a smaller government. They must be good. But it was big think tanks and big money funding libertarians. So conservatives.
I got to tell you. I don't know where this big money he's talking about floating right now. There are the Cato Institutes. There are some big, you know, the Cato puts out some good stuff. They put out some real corporatist stuff, too. There are some libertarian think tanks out there that I don't associate with libertarians at all. It's a lot of corporatist stuff. They're not wrong. But where is this big money that's been flowing into libertarians? It's strange that all this big money has been floating into libertarians. You know, I guess this this presupposes the globalists are behind the libertarians. It's very interesting because they can't get enough money to win, to run a decent gubernatorial race across 50 states for 50 years now. But it's the big money funding these libertarians.
Well, I always think of corporations as perfect. And
that is, you listen to true libertarians out there. They're all over the place. Better ones than me. Lots better than me. None of them are out there saying these corporations are perfect. Oh, they're great. They're fantastic.
and as government is bad, instead of it being a balance. And so now the globalists...
Oh, it's a balance. Sometimes government is good. Alex Jones now is saying it's a balance. You know, sometimes corporations are good, sometimes they're bad, sometimes the government is bad, sometimes the government is good.
Admit they were building governments basically run by corporations, or corporations so big they operate like governments, but way more efficient and way more authoritarian. And so... absolutely, to see libertarians defend the censorship and defend the open borders and defend all this. Well, yeah, if Mexico was on par with us and we had a functioning civilization, then you can have an agreement, open the borders up. You can't.
Now, he does bring up a point here. There is part of libertarianism, and you know, really, it's a more difficult issue. The idea of open borders. It's very nuanced, and I don't really have time to get into it now, but it would be an interesting conversation to have with somebody. Libertarians, and I've said this before, I told you, you're never going to build a wall. If you want to control illegal immigration, it's just like moths. If you want to get moths off of your porch, turn out the light. See, libertarians would never have this monstrosity of a welfare system, of socialized medicine system, of public school education system, where the taxpayers are on the hook to provide all of these services to anybody who wanders across the border. So how many people wander across the border when they know that when they get to the United States, there's no benefits waiting for them? See, the libertarians in their mind, and it's almost a thought exercise, and the libertarians out today say, well, there's no way you can have open borders with it the way the things are right now. But if you want to stop illegal immigration, libertarians, I think, would get to the root cause of it, which is turn off the light. Stop attracting with endless benefits. The money that is involved in attracting and then providing for illegal immigration all comes from anyone, the government. The government sets up a system that says, hey, if you make it across the border, we got all kinds of benefits for you. We got your free medical care. We got your free schooling. We got your free welfare. We got your free food. We got your free everything. Libertarians would do none of those things. Can you imagine maybe that you wouldn't attract so many people, wouldn't be such a drain on the U.S. taxpayer if you didn't have any of those programs?
It's totally collapsed. That'll collapse us. And so, yeah, the libertarians are now just used to siphon off Republican votes and keep Democrats in power.
There it is. Libertarians are just used. They have no core beliefs themselves. Libertarians are just spoilers. This is a very, very strange thing for me to see happen. And I have theories, no way to back it up whatsoever, but I kind of feel like maybe after 2 years of lockdowns and mandates and censorship and horrific government at every level, from the state, local, and federal government, that probably more people are thinking, you know, these two parties, I think I just want my freedom back. And so maybe the word has gone out from the Republican Party, hey, Alex, you need to tell all those people out there, they need to come back to the two-party system. They need to get back to Republicans. Now, I don't have any. I don't see any big tsunami of libertarians out there. Don't get me wrong. But this is very interesting to me that Alex Jones says, you know, a third. And I don't even care what party it is. I think we need a dozen political parties, one of them being the none of the above party. I think it would win in a landslide in most elections. I would vote for a ham sandwich before I would vote for most of these other people. The ham sandwich party would be fine with me, too. Where you literally take a ham sandwich and you put it in the seat of the House of Representatives chamber, and it just sits there and does nothing. I think that would win elections. But now Alex Jones says they're just there to siphon off Republican votes.
Also learned over the years that most of your high-level libertarians are actually Democrats, and they call them sleeper cells. Democrats have been caught on tape by Project Veritas and others, running as Republicans, also running as libertarians to siphon off votes. And so it'd be nice to have another party, but then we'd just be in a parliamentary system where Justin Trudeau gets 30% of the vote, but he's still in power. So I think of all the systems out there, our republic form with two parties is the best. What needs to happen is when one party...
Wow. Alex Jones. This is interesting. Alex Jones now a pimp for the current two-party system. Steven Crowder is going to weigh in on this in just a second, too. I just want to remind you, everything they're describing, they're not wrong about any of it. His rant at the very beginning of this thing, what they're corralling us into. He's exactly right. Who got us here? That two-party system he just told you is what we need to stick with. Wait, we got to, our republic with these two parties, it's the best option. That's what he just said. He just listed off a million horrific, tyrannical, totalitarian, authoritarian things that are going on in the United States right now. After living under this two-party system, most recently in the last 50 years, he says, but we need to stick with that. We'll finish this when we come back. Stick around.
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know. On the dashboard, melted, but we still have the radio.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I'm breaking down this interview that Steven Crowder, Louder with Crowder, did with Alex Jones, where Alex Jones came out and said, I'm no longer a libertarian. Not only that, I'm not a libertarian. I'm anti-libertarian, and it gets even worse. Steven Crowder's going to explain to you why he stopped being a libertarian, too. I'm the first one to tell you, I would love to see a libertarian takeover of the Republican Party. I think it'd be more effective. Some of the best people that we have in office are the former great Ron Paul. And if Ron Paul, he's a medical doctor. If Ron Paul, as much as I admired him as a statesman and as a politician that was trying to shrink our government and call attention to things like the Federal Reserve when no one else would listen, if he came out and said that everybody needs to take a shot, I'm a medical doctor, I believe in freedom and stuff, but I would have told you Ron Paul was dead wrong because I don't worship any politician. Libertarian Party has been an absolute train wreck full of a bunch of wokesters. It's been taken over by basically the Ron Paul revolution, people who came to libertarianism because of what Ron Paul said. And they are not these statists. If you listen to any of these people, go take a look at the Libertarian Party Twitter feed. If you believe they're some kind of a corporatist, as Alex Jones is trying to tell you, where they always defend corporations and think that they are always perfect. I think that's what Alex Jones just said. It's quite simply not true. They rail against these Wall Street firms that have captured our government. But the only reason that corporations capture the federal government is because the federal government is so powerful. If the government can't do anything for you, then you don't have the corruption. It's a pretty simple concept. Most people can't grasp. Anyway, I wanted to finish up with this. This is, again, Alex Jones and Steven Crowder explaining why libertarianism is now to be opposed at all costs.
It'd be nice to have another party, but then we'd just be in a parliamentary system where Justin Trudeau gets 30% of the vote, but he's still in power. So I think of all the systems out there, our republic form with two parties is the best.
Wow. This two-party system, it's the best we can do, people.
What needs to happen is when one party becomes satanic and psychotic and dictatorial, that party is disbanded by just a political realignment. It fades away, and then the other party splits in two with the dividing forces, or a new party is formed. Right. And that's really...
Oh, yeah, that's going to happen any day. I mean, the Democrats, did you hear that? You hear that, Democrats? You've gone too far. Could you please disband? And the Republican Party will split into two parties. You know, there's some moderate and some rhino and even some kind of, mealy-mouth Republicans out there. Now the Republican Party will split in two, and Americans will get to choose between Republicans and Republican light or whatever. That's what Alex Jones said. That's our person. What should happen, he says, is, you know, when one party becomes just absolutely insane like the Democratic Party, they should be disbanded. So there you go. That's perfectly realistic.
What happened in the first 50 years of the country, it needs to happen again. The Democratic Party is trying to outlaw the Republican Party because it's trying to outlaw populism. Populism through Trump, populism through the grassroots, the Tea Party, is reproving the Republican Party, has a double-headed enemy of the rhino, neocons, and the Democrats to deal with. But over time, it's seen by the deep state and by Biden in his red blood, you know, Hitler speech as the enemy, because it is Trumpism. Not even all Trump's ideas. I have big problems with him. But what he mobilized or what he rode in on as a surfer, that is what threatens the system. That's the American true populist opposition. And that's why the Democratic Party has declared war on it and says Homeland Security's main threat is populist Republicans, because that is how we take over the Republican Party and then revive the nation.
It's funny. You kind of came to it. There's a parallel. You sort of came in as a disc jockey, right? You're a host. I mean, listen to your voice. We're crying out loud. Did you talk like this when you were in the sixth grade?
Hold on a second. Let me see if I can get ahead here. I'm going to do some bad radio form here. I don't want to get through all this, and I didn't realize there was this big gap in there.
Lesser two evils. But they actually voted for Obama because said even though...
Here we go. Okay, this is what I wanted to get to. Steven Crowder also has now said he is no longer a libertarian, and he's got his own reasons for this. And this was interesting to me as well.
He said, you have the biggest polyps I've ever seen. He said, okay. It's lacerated. He goes, did you know it's bleeding?
He's talking about his voice, and it is interesting. I think it's done him quite well. But I want to get Steven Crowder explaining why he's not a libertarian any longer.
Talking, and if you talk, it scars it worse. So,
I avoid the throat doctor, a negative experience that I don't want to get into. But I was going to say that you,
well, this
and
is,
I,
that's why it's there.
It mirrors though. Similarly, you came in sort of, you know, as you were a radio host, you know, a disc jockey, and I came in really from a background of just as a comedian and as an actor. And I just happened to be more right wing. And actually, this man right here, Andrew Breitbart, was the guy who just started posting my stand up clips in 2008 on back when it was Big Hollywood. But I remember. I was surprised because I thought I was kind of a libertarian until I was at a dinner in D.C., as many of these dinners, you know, they exist. And I found that I want to say there was at least five, maybe six or seven people from Reason magazine. And I was subscribed to Reason magazine.
Now, for anybody who doesn't know, Reason magazine is known to be a libertarian magazine. It has got some of these what we refer to as regime libertarians in there. I disagree with some. Reason magazine was a lot like the Libertarian Party was before it was taken over earlier this year. It had a lot of people in there. There's some wokeness and some other stuff. Reason puts out some very interesting stuff and some stuff I really disagree with. But anyway, so Steven Crowder, he was a libertarian, but then he went to this dinner with five people.
And over half of them voted for Obama. And I said, well, hold on a second, what's going on here? I don't understand how. I understand if I thought maybe they would stay home, you know, not vote at that point because of the lesser of two evils. But they actually voted for Obama because they said, even though with all of this that's happened, you know, change. And that's where I said, okay, if at this point in time, you know, Greg Gutfeld, Bill Maher, Glenn Beck, and these people at Reason Magazine all identify as libertarian, it doesn't really mean anything. And I think.
So there you go. So Steven Crowder. Steven Crowder went to a Washington, D.C. dinner. Now, if you want to find the most statist, corporatist libertarians out there at some of these think tanks or these magazines, you go to Washington, D.C., of course. Most of the people in Washington, D.C. feed off of anyone? The D.C. machine. So Steven Crowder went to a dinner and discovered that five people at his table who described themselves as libertarians, had voted for Obama. So he decided that he can't be a libertarian anymore. Five people. Five people from Reason magazine. So he just decided that all of the ideas of libertarianism must be really, really bad because, look, these five people who are in Washington, D.C. at some kind of a D.C. event voted for Barack Obama. I'll also bring up the fact I didn't vote for Barack Obama. I think in 2008 I voted Constitution Party because you know what the Republicans gave you in this two-party system that that Alex Jones is telling you is the best we can do? The Republicans gave you John McCain. You know, it kind of leaves that part out. Now, I certainly was not going to vote for Barack Obama in 2008. This is why I went to the Constitution Party. But I sure as hell wasn't going to vote for John McCain. John McCain, a bloodthirsty neocon, big government statist. I mean, really, John McCain embodied almost all of the worst aspects of American politics and American foreign policy in one twisted psychopath. And this is what the Republicans gave you. So it's very interesting to me. Obviously, Barack Obama was the disaster that Barack Obama was. But I got to tell you, gun to my head, you've got to vote for one of these two people. Now, these five people from Reason Magazine, they could have done what Steven Crowder said, and I agree with him. They should have just stayed home, not voted for Barack Obama. Whether voting matters or not at this point, we're all kind of suspect. But gun to my head, in 2008, someone says, you've got to pull a trigger for either Barack Obama or John McCain. I might have voted Obama, too. John McCain was a known danger to humanity. At least with Barack Obama, there was maybe some chance, and Barack Obama did the same con job that every other presidential candidate does, which is this idea of we're going to change things. Hope and change. And then Barack Obama went in to be one of the biggest Wall Street crony presidents of all time, flooding Wall Street with money during his term, flooding the health insurers, tripling their doubling their profits in 3 years through Obamacare. But it's just interesting to me. This whole conversation comes down to Steven Crowder just looked around and he said, well, hey, these five people, five human beings out of tens of millions of people who, well, I don't know how many people would describe themselves as libertarians, but out of millions of people, these five people voted for Barack Obama, so I can't be a libertarian anymore. Well, that who can argue with that kind of logic? By that logic, how many of you know five Republicans that you can name? Maybe you didn't sit at a DC confab with them, but you can name five Republicans that you would want nothing to do with. The Liz Cheneys? Anyone? Anyone? In our own home state? The Michael Guest and the Roger Wickers of the world? A lot of people not real happy with them these days right now as they're shoveling money into Ukraine. So how many times do you, I mean, if there's five people who voted for Republicans that you disagree with, would you just abandon the Republican Party and say, well, Republican ideas are just dead? Because I saw these five people who voted for John McCain. That means I'll never vote Republican again, because if that's what being a Republican is, I can never be a Republican again. Anyway, that's pretty much all the clip I'm going to play. And I've spent the better part of an hour doing it, and I don't even know if anybody really cares, but it was just interesting to me. It was quite a hit job. It was a real, like I say, Alex Jones didn't say, yeah, I can't really be libertarian now. And I could kind of understand, you know, the costs are too high. The Republicans have got to get back in control now. I actually am cheering the Republican Party to retake Congress in the midterms. I certainly hope it happens. The Democrats have got to be stopped, and the Libertarian Party's not going to do it for sure. So I am cheering for the Republican Party for a huge red wave. That would be fantastic. But the work isn't done then. You need to do something to change your Republican Party. And if you want to elect more Thomas Masseys and Rand Pauls, I'm with you. Point them out. I'll vote for them. I don't see very many of them because Republicans don't hold their politicians accountable for anything. They see the R, they pull the lever, and then they complain. But I'm all for libertarians taking over the Republican Party. It's probably the fastest path to get back to some semblance of liberty here. But the idea that Alex Jones now is anti. Well, actually, there is one more clip. I'll see if I can play it. I only have a couple of minutes when I come back. Let me see if I can find this last little bit. I'll be right back. All right, only a couple minutes left. There were a couple more clips out of this Alex Jones with Steven Crowder, where they've come out as not only not libertarian, but anti-libertarian. Let me finish this out. Steven Crowder says something else here that I'll just say the logic fails me.
Greg Gutfeld, Bill Maher, Glenn Beck, and these people at Reason Magazine all identify as libertarian. It doesn't really mean anything, and I think today it's kind of something that needs to be shed because. You can't say, hey, let's just all be fragmented when there's this Leviathan coming from the left. I mean, five companies control 90% of the information, and now you're talking about the banking. Visa.
Well, yeah, exactly. Were the libertarians in charge when five corporations took over all of this power in the United States? Absolutely not. You can't take over a teeny tiny. There's no reason for these corporations to take over teeny tiny government, which is what the libertarians would propose. I thought that's very interesting. All of the ills that they're pointing out were created by this two-party system. But Alex Jones is telling you now, it's the best we can do. We just need to stick with this two-party system. And then Alex Jones also said this.
We're going towards Venezuela. Guaranteed, that's their admitted goal. Bankrupt the country to bring us to our knees. And so, absolutely, the libertarian.
My question would be then, why didn't the Republicans stop it? Anyone? They're just so helpless? I mean, if the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, if this two-party system is all we need, we don't need to be injecting a bunch of libertarians into the thing. We need to be anti-libertarian. If we're headed to Venezuela, the libertarians hadn't taken us there. It's the Republicans and the Democrats. Am I wrong? Am I missing something?
The Libertarian Party is a cancer. In fact,
there it is. Let me back that up. Make sure we really get the full quote there.
Venezuela. Guaranteed, that's their admitted goal, bankrupt the country to bring us to our knees. And so, absolutely, the Libertarian Party is a cancer. In fact, I'm ashamed I was ever sucked in by it, but it was a different political landscape. I was the same.
It was a different political landscape. Not the great one that we have now. He lists that we're at the brink of extinction as a nation. Now, he was a libertarian back when it was, you know, Obama versus John McCain. But now things are going so well, you don't need to think any differently. They just stick with the Republican Party because things are going. No, wait, he said that things weren't going great. I am wildly confused with this.
I'm more of a right winger. I'm pro-gun. I'm pro-life. But I'm pro-free speech and I'm anti-war. I didn't like George W. Bush and people. So I'm like, I don't like John McCain. So I'm not going to vote for John McCain or Barack Obama. And I went and protested Obama.
Okay, so it's about out of time. I just wanted to get the part in there where Alex Jones comes out and says the Libertarian Party is a cancer. Now, I'm going to give him some small pass. I don't know if he knows that the Ron Paul faction has taken over the Libertarian Party. Alex Jones has given Ron Paul a lot of airtime, has talked glowingly, rightfully so, about Ron Paul for years. I think this is a tad bit sad because it's a betrayal of Ron Paul. Alex Jones knows that Ron Paul is a libertarian guy. And that is what libertarianism is about, what Ron Paul says. Not about what five guys at a D.C. dinner, how they voted. No, Ron Paul led a revolution and explained to people that this government's too big, that the Federal Reserve is, and I'm using my words now, the Death Star. And he knows that. Alex Jones knows that. This is a huge betrayal of Ron Paul in trying to cast libertarianism in some way that he knows it is not. Can you find examples of some really horrific libertarians, some corporate apologist libertarians? Absolutely. But I would imagine you could probably go through the Republican Party and find some people you don't agree with as well. Anyway, it's about all the time I got. Hopefully I kind of explained it. I just found it weird. That's all the time we got. I'll see everybody tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.